I'm so pleased that the party agreed that we could have this panel discussion today on mental health in children and young people. It's one of those very, very difficult issues when people say, what are you doing as the health spokesperson on mental health? Because it is so massive. And what I try to do is break it down into bite-sized chunks. And hopefully today we will hear from our panellists as to how they are tackling certain aspects of it, because it is so huge, it has to be taken individually. The reason why mental health needs to be addressed for our young people, it's not just about the children of today, and I'm sure a lot of you will have seen the headline story on the BBC News Online today when they talked about the 10,000 admissions into our emergency departments through self-harm, 10% of whom are children. We know that the children of yesterday, the adults of today, there is a higher proportion of them dying from alcohol-related deaths, and people will know this can be a symptom and a form of self-medication from poor mental health. And we also know that if we don't better support our young people now to deal with the trauma and the emotional imbalance from things that happen in their houses, that they will have poor health outcomes into the future. And I'm not just talking about self-medicating or poor mental health. I'm also talking about the higher prevalence in terms of contracting diseases such as heart disease. So it is everybody's business that we take this seriously. In the Alliance Party, we do like to think of things in terms of the public purse, and not just about the individual, but how we better configure our health services so that we get the best value for money in terms of the public's money. So without further ado, I am going to ask the four panel members to speak for 2 or 3 minutes, and then I'm going to ask them just questions then generally. This is not about catching them out. But we're very, very lucky today in having such a diverse panel. And I'm first of all going to ask Niamh Malahan, who is the representative from the Belfast Youth Forum, to talk about their Elephant in the Room campaign. Thank you.
Regional youth-led mental health campaign, which is in partnership with Northern Ireland Youth Forum and Belfast Youth Forum, and previously Children's Law Centre as well. And basically, we started in 2016 to talk to young people and say, right, what are the biggest issues facing you today? And the number one issue always coming back was mental health. So we decided, this was whenever I was only in the Belfast Youth Forum, that it was too difficult for us to do it by ourselves, so we teamed up with other organisations as well to start the Elephant in the Room campaign. And then from there, we sort of created a subgroup of people from each of the organisations and started working on what exactly we were going to ask about. And we'd seen that Nikki had already started their research into their Still Waiting campaign, so we knew we wouldn't do services because there's no point duplicating the reports. So we sort of went for before the services, so what young people think about mental health, what they understand about it, where they get their information, and what they think about that information. So we created a focus or a survey, first of all, and it went out to across the, like, the C2K network and all that sort of stuff, and we had paper copies for anyone that couldn't get on to the online version of the survey. We got about 1,117 responses for that, which we were quite shocked by, but it was great. And then from the preliminary findings of that, we created our focus groups, and we did focus groups in Belfast, Derry, Londonderry, Newry and Ballymena. And then from all that information that we gathered, we created a research report, which is our Elephant in the Room report, and we launched that in Stormont last year on the 4th of October. And from then, basically, we've just been trying to get our key asks for government, like, implemented. So we've sort of got, like, two parts of our campaign now. It's the awareness raising, and then there's the lobbying decision makers and important people, I suppose. So I'll just tell you our key ask for government. So we are asking government to help create an awareness raising campaign for young people about to reduce the stigma around mental health and end the culture of silence. So that's sort of what we're doing already by going out and talking to more groups of young people. And then we want to create a compulsory education programme to be put in all schools, and it's the same level across all schools. So we've started meeting with the Department of Education and stuff about that. And then our last one is to create an online safe space where young people can go online and get the information they need about mental health, and also possibly creating a 24/7 counselling service online so that young people don't have to like phone up Lifeline or Childline or whatever as well. So that's sort of a basic overview of Elephant in the Room.
Thank you very much. It's funny because Niamh wasn't meant to be on our panel today, but she came to see me on Thursday evening with some of her colleagues, and she says part of our campaign is to raise awareness. And I said, well, why don't you come to a Lance Party conference on Saturday and raise awareness there? So thank you for stepping in at such short notice, and best of luck with your work. I'm going to ask now Maurice Meehan from the Public Health Agency to make some introductory remarks. Let me just check this. Maurice is the Head of Health and Social Wellbeing Improvement for the Public Health Agency. So over to you.
Okay, thank you, Paula. Okay, so Sir Michael Marmot, in his review of health inequalities, really pointed to giving every child the best start in life as the absolute key cornerstone of the public health approach. So we have been... Apologies. So essentially I've kind of alluded to Sir Michael Marmot and his review of health inequalities and his conclusion that giving every child the best start in life was the absolute cornerstone of a public health approach to reduce health inequalities and to improve outcomes for children and young people. So essentially that framework, that approach, has been very much at the forefront of the Public Health Agency and our public health approach to trying to approach improved outcomes in Northern Ireland for children and families. And essentially what I was going to do was really do some reflection on some of the conclusions of our 10-year journey in that process, and to really, I suppose, encourage, stimulate you to think about the first 1,000 days in particular as being a kind of really important priority to think about in the context of mental health, infant mental health, and improved outcomes for children and young people and adults in later life. And essentially it's important that when I say this and make reference to the first 1,000 days, that's not to say that our investment in 48 teens should be any less or any less of a priority, because what we know is that if things go wrong in the first 1,000 days, then children become older, then obviously the 3-year-olds become the 4-year-olds, become the 18-year-olds, become the adults. So that's not to say that we move investment over to the first 1,000 days away from 48 teens, but I think the neuroscience, the increased understanding of what happens at a neuroscientific and a biological level has been so compelling, and people like Bruce Perry, people like Alan Shore, people like Dan Seelig, some of these kind of really international kind of neuroscientists and so on, are talking about incredible new waves of scientific understanding of the antecedents to our health and our mental health, and how critical this first 1,000-day window is to intervene when things can go wrong for families and they need additional support. And coincidentally, I mean, just to commend you, and for some of you policy people and people who may be thinking about writing your policy priorities, the House of Commons have just produced a first 1,000 days of life report. That's the House of Commons Health and Social Care Committee, primarily about a focus in the English context, but they've been taking input from Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland in the context of that programme. Just to read a little couple of lines from that. The first 1,000 days from conception to age 2 is a critical phase during which the foundation of a child's development are laid. If a child's body and brain develop well, when their life chances are their life chances are improved. Exposure to stresses or adversity during this period can result in a child's development falling behind their peers. Left unaddressed, experiences such as abuse or conflict between parents can stay with children throughout their lives, can cause harm to them and others, and may be passed on to the next generation. And it then talks about the adverse childhood experiences, and some of you may be familiar with some of the work of Nadine Barcaras, with Vincent Folletti, Robert Anda, and the adverse childhood experiences. I really would encourage those of you who are interested in this implication of toxic stress and adversity in childhood and the implications it has for our disease profile and for later life outcomes, to look up a TED talk by Nadine Burke-Harris, who gives a 14-minute brilliant TED talk on 14 on that. And for those of you who may be able to access or attend any of the it's Robert Redford's son, who's a documentary maker, who's done a film called Resilience. So our focus, and my focus in particular, among a whole raft of work on children and young people, has been focusing on the infant mental health framework. And essentially, we've been trying to do a couple of things. One is to increase the depth of workforce training for those who are working with vulnerable families, and also then to influence and shape a better service offer for families, so that we have a better pathway into professionals and teams and service models where essentially people can go to where problems are accruing very early in life. And my critique or observation overall in our system is that we don't have targets for that in our health service. Largely, we do know that if we don't intervene with a proportion of our population, they are the children who will end up in a self-harming 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds. So there is a lot can be done in early intervention. Many of the professionals who do work with children who experience significant mental illness would say they, from what they understand, the antecedents of that mental illness started at a very early stage in life. So essentially then, I think for me, then the conclusions of my kind of observation and work over 10 years and kind of focus in on this area of the first 1,000 days would be to encourage you to think about that first 1,000 days. And this policy report is just fresh and just out. Think about supporting infant mental health. I suppose in particular, I think there's a job of work around introducing a child psychotherapy workforce in Northern Ireland, because those professionals, and they aren't here in Northern Ireland, they're not here in Wales either, but they are in Scotland and England. And I think if we don't have a child psychotherapy workforce, we're going to be limited in accessing the professionals who are trained to the highest level in understanding the dynamics of vulnerability at that very early stage. And I suppose then the other thing is really just to conclude with referencing this ACE agenda, this trauma-informed approach. The Department of Health, through Early Intervention Transformation Programme, have invested through the Safeguarding Board in Northern Ireland in a team of people who are going around justice and health and social care and education, really to explore the opportunity for input around a trauma-informed approach and how significant toxic stress can be in childhood for later life outcomes, and what can be done across those systems to increase a better understanding of that. So those are some thoughts, and maybe some very interested if anybody wants to follow up with me in the Public Health Agency on some of those references and some of those documents.
Thank you. And just to highlight there what Maurice said there about that documentary that's online called Resilience. I think it would probably very much encapsulate everything that Maurice has just said. It's like a light bulb moment for anybody who's interested in public health. So we'll move on to Karen Collins now. She's the Chief Executive, recently appointed Chief Executive of AWARE. As people will know, it's a mental health charity.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to come along and join you this afternoon. I'm very much here today from the perspective of a service provider. As Paula said, I'm currently the Chief Executive of AWARE, which is the depression charity for Northern Ireland. I'm relatively new to post, so be gentle with me. AWARE, for any of you that aren't familiar, provides services that are dedicated expressly to those affected by depression and bipolar disorder. And our key areas of work focus around providing a regionally based peer support network of individuals in the form of support groups, where individuals affected by depression and their carers and families can come along, share their stories, get mutual support on a week-to-week basis. And secondly, then, through a range of wellbeing programmes, which we aim to provide positive mental health, while also educating on the signs and symptoms of poor mental health, and signposting individuals as to where they can get help in those situations. So each year, around £40,000 people directly engage with the organisation, and many more through their network of families and friends will be affected and supported by the work of the organisation. So we have a very keen interest in the issues surrounding the mental health of children and young people, including perinatal mental health. Predominantly, we've been working with the adult population, and we unfortunately see the impact of a lack of investment into services for children and young people, evidenced by the 1 in 9 people in Northern Ireland who are affected now by depression, and the fact that we have a 25% higher prevalence of mental health conditions in Northern Ireland than in other parts of GB. So quite startling. Our areas of work to try and address and support on this agenda have been involvement with the Perinatal Mental Health Alliance. Unfortunately, Lindsay Robinson wasn't able to be with us today from the Everybody Matters campaign, Everybody's Business campaign, which is targeting more investment into antenatal provision and into investment into awareness about mental health issues of new parents, new fathers, and how that can impact the early development of the newborn baby, and the reports that Morris has mentioned around those first 1,000 days and how critical those are. As part of that, we have been piloting with the Public Health Agency our Awares and Mood Matters Parent and Baby Programme, which for any of you that are new parents, you've maybe experienced it. I had a baby 16 months ago and I just missed it. So I've seen it from a provider's point of view, but not experienced it from a user's. But the purpose of that programme is to contribute fundamentally to the antenatal programme that parents will experience, where in the past we have not talked a great deal about antenatal depression, about postnatal depression, and we haven't talked directly about mental health implications, and really bypassed the whole fact that having a new baby is a fundamental life change and can have major stressors connected to it, and that it's quite normal for people to suffer depression as a result of that. 1 in 5 women currently affected by that. So we've been really pleased to be piloting that programme with the Public Health Agency, and the outcomes of it so far have been really positive. We'll maybe touch more on that later on. Secondly, we've been involved in delivering mindfulness in schools project, which is targeted at 7 to 11 year olds. So we talk a lot about CAM services and about counselling services, but there's also a huge need for earlier intervention approaches, and mindfulness we've found has been a really constructive approach for younger children and for young people. It's very much about teaching resilience skills, coping strategies, meditation type techniques to help manage stress. So that's a programme that we're developing and delivering with 7 to 11 year olds in primary schools. And then our third key area of work on this is around our Mood Matters for Young People programme, which we deliver in around 110 post-primary schools every year. Again, very much targeted at helping young people to realise that mental ill health can be normal, is normal, isn't something to be ashamed of or embarrassed about, but something that we want to talk about openly. That through that training programme, they can learn to identify the signs and symptoms that they might have a problem with their mental health, or that one of their friends may have a problem, and to learn what they can do to support their friend, to support themselves, how they can get help, and some of the tools that they can use to work with that. The ethos behind it being supporting young people at the earliest possible stage so that they can manage the stressors and anxieties that are normal as part of life, so that they hopefully don't need more intervention in the form of counselling services or CAM services at a later stage. So overall, we are hugely aware of the limited services that are available from perinatal to young people in terms of access to a range of mental health, and the complete disparity that's there, very mixed bag and a great diversity in terms of the professionalism and the standards of services that are there at the moment, and some real challenges about how we bring some professionalism and some standardisation to that. Not a good position at the moment at all, that so many children and young people are needing access to CAM services, which, as we know, are heavily overused and huge waiting lists for them. Over and above that, of course, as well, we know that financially it's costing us more to address problems when they've gone wrong, where it can be much more cost-effective to intervene at an earlier stage, but it also provides a much more effective moral and social outcome, where we're looking after our children at the first opportunity rather than treating them when things have gone wrong for them. For us as an organisation, the key things that we are looking at in our agenda going forward is how we can challenge and advocate to mainstream education on mental health in the same way that we have mainstream messages around our physical health. So our curriculum is fairly scant in what it says about looking after and educating our children and young people about our mental health. And why is that? I mean, it's as important as their physical health, and we're seeing the ramifications of us not providing that education. So it's a key area of work that we want to lobby around and to advocate for going forward. And similarly, how do we ensure that messages about mental health of new mums and babies are given the same attention as their physical well-being? As I said, we've made some progress around that with the Public Health Agency on board with that programme, but still some work to be done there.
Okay, thank you very much, Karen. I was very pleased that Karen agreed to come, because we do know that there are services out there. Sometimes you think that things are not happening at all, but I do know that there's such a demand for the services they put, especially into the schools. So our last speaker at this stage is Kula Yasuma, who is the Children's Commissioner with the Northern Ireland Commission for Children and Young People, and I've asked her specifically to talk about a report they launched last year, but knowing Kula, she'll probably speak about what comes into her head.
Good luck with that. I was hoping I would speak about the fact that Arsenal beat Spurs, but I can't do that. But a draw's good. I'm happy with a draw. So thank you very much, Paula, and good afternoon, everybody. That's David Ford. Is that your phone? No, okay. Just checking. Or maybe it's another politician looking for me. Just want to say how pleased I am. And when I became Children's Commissioner on the 2nd of March 2015, I set one of my priorities to be children's emotional well-being and mental health. And I'm very pleased that my first engagement on the first day of my second term of office is to talk about the same thing. Disappointed that I'm still talking about it, but we're talking about, as Marissa said, a 10-year change. So you've already heard, and you've heard from Niamh, why the young people involved in Elephant in the Room did the work, because it's the number one issue for young people across the piece. But it's also the number one issue for our educators, whether in a primary school or post-primary school, that's what they're talking about. And we first just going to explore why is it that children's mental health in Northern Ireland is the top issue. And it's not because our children are softer than they were when we were kids. That's not the case. There's a number of reasons why the world they live in is harsher than the world we lived in. But also, it's harsher maybe, I'm talking to a group of people who grew up in the Troubles. That's, I can get why that may sound a bit of an odd thing to say. When I mean harsher, what I mean is unexpected. I think it's probably a fairer way to say it. So children today talk about things that stress them, and that includes education, that includes family factors, that includes the fact that 40% of our children's mental health is affected, 40% of families are affected by the conflict. And that means the children living in those families, children who were born after the ceasefires, their mental health and well-being is affected by the fact they live in families and communities who have been traumatized as a result of the conflict. We cannot underestimate the impact of social media. Not because social media is a bad thing, it's not, but because sometimes what happens on social media, those of us who are charged with caring with children don't see. And we don't see it sometimes until it's too late, because our children are like this and often are doing it in their room. So bullying we used to be able to see in the playground or out in the street when they were playing. And we could have intervened or picked up the signs, and we weren't always very good at that as adults. But now when it's going more online, more in the digital world, we're not as adults as confident in intervening in our children's online world, and we really, really need to have a think about how we do that and get better at that. And as Children's Commissioner, children have rights, and they have rights to privacy, but they also have a right to be protected from us as adults, and the two do not compete with each other. As a parent, when my children were young, they did not have unfettered access to social media. I kept a very close eye on everything they were doing until such time as I was comfortable that they were and confident that they could navigate that world and know to say when there were risks. And we need, as parents, to be confident with doing that. I know I'm more interested in having the discussion. So what we did was, when we announced our priorities, we had a look at where the weaknesses were in the system. And what we were hearing, particularly in our job, in my job is to hold statutory agencies to account. So we had to look at where it was in the state-run system with health, social care, justice, and Department of Communities and their agencies, where they were supporting children or letting them down, which is why we looked at children's journey into the child and adolescent mental health system. We found out about children's experiences, the experiences of their parents and the professionals who work with them. We looked at the data, such as it is, that the system collects, and we also looked at the spend that is invested in children's mental health across the piece. And we then, the week before Elephant in the Room published Still Waiting. It's 300 pages long, so I hope you see it comfortably as I go through each and every page. No, I'm not really. I've got an appointment for cocktails later, so... But it's what's really important. What we came up with 50 recommendations, and they fit into neat parcels. One of which is going back to mental health being everybody's business. Mental health and children's emotional well-being is not the business of parents. It's not the business of communities. It's not the business of schools. It's not the business of health service. It's all of our business, and not one of those factors in a child's life can deal with them, can support children on their own. We need to do it collectively. And so we made a series of recommendations around working better together across agencies, and particularly keeping our children and their families as the focus. Like Elephant in the Room, we talked a lot about mental health training for all professionals who work with children. Because children find the person they click with and talk to them. That person needs to feel confident and able to support that child and take them forward, not to just say, oh, no, I can't deal with that. And then there's 15 people before they get to the first person. And then, of course, we need mental health literacy and awareness for our children and for our parents, so that our young people, we call our report Still Waiting, because young people are waiting before they even ask for help because they don't have the language to be able to do that. And the same is with parents. I mean, they're waiting to get services, which is the biggest calamity, but that we need to be able to give our children the language. And Karen's right when she says there's no shame to being mentally unwell. And also, the importance of education in early years is around prevention. And I just want to give a couple of facts, and then we'll move on around spending. Karen again has said, and she's right, it's estimated that in Northern Ireland we have 25% higher prevalence of mental health than they do across the water. We know that our children die through suicide at higher levels than they do anywhere else on these islands, and our self-harming levels are incredibly, are unacceptable. We spend less than a penny in every health pound on children's mental health in Northern Ireland. We spend £163 per year on adult for their mental health, yet only £45 on children's mental health. I'm not looking to take money away from adult mental health, please don't think I am. But when we know that 75% of adult mental health conditions are manifest in children by the time they're age 18, We need to balance that investment in our children. So that's as much as I'm going to say, okay. But you can ask me loads of questions.
Okay, oh, thank you. and thank you very much. I have heard Kula speak before. And having gone through the report, not word by word, line 300 pages, but I have gone through the recommendations, and there's certainly plenty there to be pulled out on. So maybe just open it up a wee bit then. Can I just start with you, Niamh, in terms of the feedback you've got in your surveys? You know, what are people saying? What are the young people saying in terms of why it's so difficult to start talking about and presenting to their parents or other responsible adults about their mental health problems?
Well, I think one of the big issues that came through was, as Kula was saying, young people don't have the language to talk about mental health, and they don't know what to say or who to say it to. And I think a lot of young people were coming back and saying that whenever they reached out for help, perhaps going to their GP was like, oh, here's some tablets, go away. Mm-hmm. And that's not what young people need. And then they're going to their friends, and their friends didn't know what to say, so their friends were going, oh, go to the GP. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a vicious cycle. So young people just, and then they go to the internet, and then the internet gives them false information, and whatever way they turn, they're just not getting the help that they need.
Thank you. Any other, anybody else want to comment on that?
Bang on the money.
No. Okay, oh, thank you. Maurice, can I ask you then, have you seen a change then in the 10 years in terms of the spend or even the focus within the health department, public health agency around mental health? Is it? Do you see that the stigma has been lifted and the...
I think there's definitely a shift in some areas to doing the right thing because the science and needs are dictating the new formation of new models. The Southern Trust, in terms of their infant CAM service, is a good example. The recent collaboration between Southeastern Trust and Bernardo's and Tiny Life in terms of creating the new ABC PIPS service for under threes and the families. Really, really, really well-crafted, good collaboration, good partnership, doing the right thing because parents need it, or a proportion of our parents really need it. That's taken place despite our commissioning focus. So I think we need to have some disruption in our investment in order to support a better proportion of some of the models that we can put in place, because it's fairly barren. We need to do more, and some of the training we're doing around two-year diploma training for infant mental health diploma, for health visitors and for other professionals, are enabling people within our core services. Really, it's weaponizing them with skills that they want to use in service models. But our service models, including our core CAMs, are not going there just yet, but I think we're in a process of moving them in that direction. And I think then some of the debates that we, there are some potential, our Deputy Chief Nursing Officer, there's a mental health workforce review, I think there are opportunities to have discussions about a better alignment in terms of what we have within our investment. We can do more, I think.
Thank you. Karen, can I ask you then, in terms of the feedback you're receiving through the programmes, you know, how much are people still recognising that the Troubles had an impact on mental health within families and communities?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose we caught ourselves into thinking that we're now so far past the Troubles and past the Good Friday Agreement that there is no impact anymore of conflict and of transgenerational trauma, and very much not the case at all in terms of what we're hearing and what we're seeing. I should say, before coming to Aware, I headed up a counselling organisation for 10 years, and day and daily you were hearing experiences from young children of the impact of transgenerational trauma, because we have to recognise that as adults living through the Troubles, we/you, I just caught the tail end of them, adapted your way of living and adapted how you were and your attitude to risk and to caution and to your daily life. You're checking your cars, you're being aware of risks around you, town centres being barricaded off and so forth. And that passed on subliminal messages to children and to then how they are living now. So it's still very much something that is coming up in counselling scenarios and is affecting the lives of our young people. And again, it's about in the early intervention approaches that we advocate for, I suppose it's taken a step away from that a little bit and trying to teach skills that are generally applicable in a range of stressful situations, so that those resilience and capacity skills are there, that whenever children find themselves in a scenario where it's unusual to them, they're stressed for because of exams or because of a threatening physical situation, that they have got the resources within themselves to cope with that.
Okay. And Kula, I'm going to open up, if anybody has any questions, I'm going to open up to the floor just after this next question to Kula. And it's really just about how she would like to see the CAMS programme. I think that's probably like the figurehead of the access into mental health services for young people. But how would you like to see that developed, improved?
So, CAMS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health System in Northern Ireland, has organised itself into what it calls the stepped care model, which is five steps. The first two are universal services and early intervention. And step three is when you go into more formalised specialist services run by health and social care. And what we know is, talking about stigma, what we know is because we're talking more about children's mental health, what we've done is we've raised awareness, but we've created a need, the articulation of a need that we can't meet. And whether so the main way, not the only way, the main way that's used in Northern Ireland to get into CALMS is through our GPs, and we are asking our GPs to be specialists in children's mental health, and they're not. So what they're doing is they're referring into child and adolescent services, and 42% of those referrals in 15-16 were knocked back, not because CALMS was full, but because they weren't deemed appropriate for various reasons. So what we need to understand is where those 42% of young people go to. So it's clear that we don't have enough services in our community, whether it's early intervention, prevention, or whether it's early help. So when you ask me the question, what should happen to CALMS, we don't really know, Paula, because we don't have the data. We don't know enough about what happens to those young people once they are accepted. So there's a 9-week waiting time. So we know they get to first appointment. What we don't know is what happens to them afterwards. We don't know how long their treatment is. We don't know what the outcomes are. We know there are worrying figures of over-medication, and again, Neve's right. So the GPs are struggling, and what they do is they medicate children. Sometimes, and I stand over that what I'm about to say, because it's in the report, I am worried about the levels of medication that NICE say medicines that shouldn't be given to children and young people, or not shouldn't be given, but aren't as effective with children as they would be with adults. So what we need to do is to have good data. If we're going to be a child's rights compliant Northern Ireland, the first thing we need to understand is the state of children's rights in Northern Ireland by having the information and the data. One of which is by talking to children themselves. The second is to look at to crunch the information. And CALMS cannot give us the information. And I am hopeful with some of the transformation money that we'll get there. But what we need is a system that is responsive to the needs of its children. And in schools, and I will shut up. Maybe I won't. Who knows? What we need in schools, so we have a counselling service in all post-primary schools. But we need it in primary schools as well to be tailored to our little ones. We also need quality assured support services going into our schools. At the moment, and I know PHA and DE are doing some work with NCB around some of this. We have schools bringing in organisations and individuals to support children's mental health, and I'm not sure that I know for a fact that there's been no quality assurance process, formalised, universal, Northern Ireland-wide quality assurance process about what's going on. And so what we're doing is picking lots of different things for our children, and that's not actually helping them go forward. You know when you go to the supermarket, unless you have a list and you've got a recipe, you're not actually going to have a whole meal coming out of it. And children's mental health, needs to be part of a whole piece, and we need to work together. So that was a really rambling answer to it. We don't have enough information, and we need to get better, and our children deserve quality assured programmes. Yeah.
Can I just respond on that specific issue of the Department of Education are, I think, very conscious of a lot of representation being made from schools and politicians and communities about this whole need for a better promoting mental health and emotional well-being context for schools, permission for leadership, permission for investment in what works in that space, rather than a little bit of different things being tried in the absence of, that's what happens in a vacuum if you don't have a framework for which will clearly indicate what should be done and how and what will work. But there are some islands of really, I mean, Carrickfergus Grammar School and their collaboration with, they've got a really good programme which comes from leadership, comes from a kind of really well-crafted kind of approach that they have built there. So we have been doing a review with University of Ulster and with NCB in preschools, primary schools, post-primary schools, special schools about best practice. We've commissioned a meta-analysis of what works in social and emotional learning in primary school settings with Queen's. So we've commissioned research which hopefully will inform a better framework, and I think DE are very committed, and Education Authority are very committed to supporting the recommendation 32 in Still Waiting.
Oh, great, thank you. Okay, I'm going to open up if anybody in the hall would like to raise their hands. I think there is a mic if anybody has any specific questions.
Karen Douglas does over there.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Karen. Thank you, Karen.
Before I even raise my hand, Carla, thank you.
We're in sync, Karen.
We're in sync today, yeah. Well, first of all, I'd like to recognise the work that Kuli Yu, as the Commissioner, has done since you've really come into post. I think our children really need a strong advocate and somebody who's there to champion, but also to challenge elected representatives and also PHA, the board and the department. We really need that. I think that's a critical point. For me, I suppose, I had written a paper which I'd submitted to PHA back in 2011 when I headed up CAMS, one of the CAMS services. And for me, there's a wealth of information, evidence-based evidence. We know what works. And for me, there's a sense of frustration why we haven't already implemented that. I suppose my question then, maybe unfairly to Morris, is, you know, rather than going back out and reinventing the wheel and looking at little pockets and little pilots here, why don't we just implement what we already know what works? How quickly can we get those things in? And rather than a trust-by-trust basis, because Northern Ireland, we're such a small locality, what about actually just bringing it in across the whole region? It shouldn't be a postcode lottery. There's going to be certain projects in particular trust areas that work very well, and that's great for those children and families, but what about the other children and the other trusts who don't have that? So I'd like to see us really implementing what we know what works elsewhere. We need a full package in place in terms of funding. Cull is absolutely right. I mean, CAMS has been the Cinderella service for far too long. And the second issue for me then, in addition to the lack of funding, the dearth of funding here in Northern Ireland, is the issue of stigma. So how is it that our children can talk about a broken ankle, a sore toe or a sore tummy or whatever, but they can't actually say, I'm feeling down, I have thoughts of life not worth living? I'm a counsellor in Childline, and the amount of children who phone us on a daily basis who are completely distressed, who from a very early age are saying that they have a low mood and they self-harm on a regular basis and they actually feel completely worthless and hopeless. That's a huge problem in our society, and we have to be talking about that. We need some kind of a broader awareness and educational campaign in Northern Ireland, and I'd really like to see the PHA getting behind that. Thank you.
Yeah, look, I personally wouldn't disagree with anything that was just said there. I mean, as a parent, as a citizen, as a professional, you know, I mean, all of us want to see things get better, and it seems to be that despite a lot of things that are happening in our investment across the public sector, that there are processes. We've doubled the number of autism diagnosed cases of autism in the past 5 years. There are really new and emerging waves of need. Talking to Women's Aid, who talk about them seeing 12,000 children a year in the context of their experience of domestic violence, sometimes it feels a bit overwhelming, the levels of need that seem to exist that are presenting and causing multifactorially, you know, presentations to all sorts of services. So it feels like there's a lot of effort and resource in place. We have to make best use of the assets that we have. Public health agencies aren't specifically responsible for child and adolescent mental health service that sits with the Health Social Care Board, but that part of the board is moving over to the public health agency within 2 years. So we've had the Still Waiting report. We have ongoing reviews of and recommendations and actions that are taking place, some significant investment taking place in the modernisation and movement forward of our child adolescent mental health services. I would agree with the Still Waiting report, then trying to make full use of the community and voluntary sector and other assets in the system to make sure we have a better integrated approach, as opposed to it being, you know, maybe disparate and not a part of as fully a single system as possible. We've got work to do there. But I think we've all got responsibility. Some of the things that are in play in our society and internationally will mean that we have challenges right here and now that some of the, you know, they're, you know, assimilating and supporting our newcomer populations, the implications, I think, of all sorts of new needs are presenting to ourselves. So I think the agree, I'd certainly be interested in your report if you have indicated that you have a report which is pointing to some solutions about what works. I've never seen that, but certainly interested in the, for me, I follow a public health scientific approach to trying to find what works, and we're implementing it in some cases in terms of our family support investment, our parenting programs, and our infant mental health offer.
Thank you very much. Jackie?
Is that all right? Folks, again, I just want to second really what Karen has said in terms of well done and all the work that you've done. As a primary school teacher, I see firsthand kind of children, and Kula, you're absolutely right, from a very, very young age. I've seen from nursery right up through the primary school children really experiencing some really traumatic things and having serious issues with their mental health at 4 and 5 years old. What I kind of, and Morris, you kind of nearly almost answered my question really in terms of, you know, there are so many organisations out there doing fantastic work, and I commend every single one of you because you are all working so hard on the issue. But what I see as a teacher is it not feeding through into the education system. And what I would almost say at the moment is, in my experiences, that we are nearly hitting a crisis point with our young people in terms of our mental health. And, you know, Karen's absolutely right. Why is it that they can talk about, you know, their broken ankle or their broken bones or their broken, you know, whatever, but we cannot talk to our children very openly about their mental health? And I remember kind of one stage with a parent in school one day. I used to do a lot of mindfulness with my children. And I was teaching a primary 7 class. We were doing transfer kind of work and stuff. It's gone back quite a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember after lunchtime, I used to have the children all laid out on the floor and we'd do a bit of mindfulness. And a mum came in to me one day and said, "What are you doing? You know, you have these children sleeping after lunchtime. What's going on there?" You know, it's like, no, we're just taking that moment to just really kind of gather ourselves again after lunch. So really what I'm kind of trying to say as well is, when do you see this being something that will cohesively, you all as groups, coming together to feed into the education system?
I think I'm going to ask Kula to answer that, and then Karen, maybe if you want to.
I think it's a really important question, and we live in a world with what gets measured is what we consider important. So we live in a world where we have league tables. Now, not so much obviously for primary school, but certainly for post-primary schools, we have league tables, and league tables measure one thing and one thing only: academic attainment, particularly GCSEs. So the average standard for a post-primary school is 5 GCSEs, A to C, including English and maths, and that's what we all strive for. And that's 40 years old, that metric, 40 years old from the days of GCSEs. So what we need to do is add another priority into our education system, which is children's wellbeing. The purpose of education, as signed up by the UK government under the UNCRC, is to develop a child's talents, personalities, and abilities. It's not just to do academic subjects. So it's absolutely right. We should help children develop confidence and self-esteem. We should help children engage with the political and civil world. So lots of children got criticised for coming out on the climate change marches. I thought it was the most fabulous thing I'd ever seen. I've also been criticised, the children who have been out on a school day marching for Irish language rights. I think with kids out there demanding their rights, peacefully, respectfully, all those things, it's just amazing, and that's what education should be about. Shouldn't just be about, absolutely has to be about academic attainment as well, but it should be about all these things. And so what I would like to see, and I think the Department of Education are on message, is that when parents look at league tables, they look at these two things. Not only the 5 GCSEs, but also the wellbeing. We can measure wellbeing amongst children. There are robust ways of doing that. And once we have that as a core consideration of school management and teachers and school staff are given the space to be able to do that. Watch us fly. Watch us fly, with the right investment, because we need to value both, and we have to value both. And just to say about post-primary schools, secondary schools, I have an 18-year-old who's leaving school. She's insisting on going across the water. I'm hoping she fails her exams and stays home with me. But I couldn't have predicted the world of work when she was born. So this, you know, we have to do STEM subjects, or we should study. What we need is resilient, confident fighters who are out there and ready, heroes, ready to take on the world, because we can't predict what the world of work's going to look like for them, and we need to give them the skills. So my big thing is, let's measure a successful education system should be a system that develops a child's talents, personalities and abilities, and these things are measurable. And let's get on with it and do that. And then I think those other things will fall into place.
Karen, and Niamh, do you want to come in after? Karen can then
leave. You and then we're... as part of our report, we actually asked people, well, what do you think about the education programs that are in school already? And we did mention primary schools. And there were a lot of young people saying, oh, this should be brought into at a primary school level, because people are becoming more and more aware of their emotional and mental health. But some young people were saying, no, it's not fair. We shouldn't mention it to young people, because then it'll make them think about mental health, which I personally don't believe is true. But because, say, for example, like there was a young boy, third year in my school last year, took his own life, and it was his little sister who found him, and she was 7. So obviously there are young people like below the ages of like 12 and 13 that are being subjected to this sort of thing, and it does need to be taught more. And you're saying bringing it into the education. We had a meeting at the start of the midterm there with the Department of Education, saying, right, this needs to be brought in as a compulsory curriculum programme in all schools. And they said to us, oh, but it is in schools. And we went, where? We're in school, we don't see it. So they said it's in LW, in personal development and mutual understanding, but it's not at the level that it should be. So we are going to work with them on trying to bring it more and more into the curriculum, because at the minute it's just sort of schools are told, right, you have to do this basic level of like mentioning like mental wellbeing, and schools can decide whether they just do that or they bring it further, but there's no resources for them. So we were meeting with SIA also and talking about maybe creating more resources for schools and for teachers to be able to work on mental health with our students. So that's my input anyway.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen.
I completely endorse everything that Niamh said on the issue. As you say as well, there are so many services that are there that are potentially available. We have a very mix and match system. It's very, very diverse. And depending on which region you're living in, you'll have access to more or less services. The bottom line is also that school does have autonomy on this. They control their own budgets and they will bring in or use whichever services they want to. So to fulfil that basic tick box agenda that Niamh has alluded to, many of them will bring in whichever agency they choose or whichever they know of or whoever has marketed to them that week. And there isn't an overarching sense of quality assurance on them. And I wouldn't for one advocate that there's one size that fits everybody and there should be just one programme, because that won't fit for every school. There are different cultures and ethoses to schools, and some programmes will fit better than others. But certainly some sense of a framework or a template of a range of programmes that are verified or accredited or validated by the department, by the curriculum authority, by the PHA, that are suitable to meet the agenda that our school children need to be educated on, so they can talk about these issues. The involvement in the curriculum is key to this. For how long have we mainstreamed conversations about physical health? We've talked about healthy eating, we've talked about exercise. We're not talking enough about looking after our emotional health and wellbeing. And I completely agree that talking about your mental health is not something that's going to create an adverse effect in you. You know, talking to children at a very sensible level when they're 5 and 6 and 7 about, you can feel stressed, you can feel anxious, things might be happening at home that upset you. These are normal responses. What is a normal way and a helpful way for you to deal with that? It's just giving them the coping tools to deal with things that will become more complicated for them as they get older. So it's absolutely crucial. There are a vast range of very effective, very useful services at the moment, but schools have limited budgets, organisations have limited budgets, and there's a huge plethora there. Schools are confused about what to bring in. They need some guidance and some direction on it.
Okay, I'm just going to ask each of the panel members just in 30 seconds, please. As I mentioned at the start, it is almost like a big, huge elephant. You have to bite off in small chunks. And it's really just to ask each of you if there was just one thing that you could say to us as audience, as politicians and political activists to take from this, what would it be?
Oh, good grief.
Yes.
I've never done anything in 30 seconds in my life. I think, oh, God. Listen to what our young people are telling us. Understand, so the data, we need to understand better what it is that ails them and where they go to get services, and design a service that meets their needs. And that will, there's no way around this, it will need additional investments. There's no one thing, but there's a series of things.
Okay, thank you. Karen?
And just on the back of that, I'm going to say it's not just all about the money though as well, because there are lots of very effective early intervention approaches which are much more cost effective than what we're doing at the moment. We're treating things when they've gone wrong right now, and we're going to have to continue to do that for a while till we get ahead of this. But right now we need to start investing more in the early intervention approaches, which are much more cost effective as well as a much better moral and social imperative for our young people.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say, based on some of the things that have been said and my focus here today, I would say, you know, purposeful workforce service development models for vulnerable families and their 0 to 3s, I think is a real ask, and I think it's possible, and we have the beginning of practices which can inform better work, both for from prenatal mental health and from ICAMS. And secondly, a child psychotherapy workforce. I think if we somehow then those two things happened, I think we'd be in a richer place.
Okay, and Lee?
I'd say just don't keep mental health as a topic to talk about behind closed doors. Just talk about it in normal conversation and ask people how they're doing. And if they say, oh, I'm not doing well, just listen to them, because that sort of it raises awareness and it gets more people talking about it. And the more you talk about it, the more of an impact you're going to be able to have on people's lives and the mental health of everyone. So, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, listen, thank you very much, Cúile, Karen, Maurice and Niamh. Could you all give them a round of applause? Thank you.